Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. Glad you tuned in. Well, I am thrilled about today's show because I get to talk with one of my favorite guests, Stephen Mansfield, and he's written a new book about what God calls men to actually be, and we're going to unpack it together, and you are in for a powerful discussion. So here's my question for you to think about today. When you think of a manly man, what virtues and traits come to mind? When you think of a manly man, what virtues and what traits come to mind? Okay, here's an excerpt from Stephen's book. He says this, "I believe something fairly radical. True manhood comes from doing manly deeds. It's the mastery of a body of behaviors. By words like manly and manhood, I don't mean the kind of behavior we see in the fake masculinity that surrounds us today. There's nothing manly about a guy downing booze until he throws up in the street. There's nothing manly about cruising for women like some predatory beast and then devouring them for pleasure before casting them aside. There's nothing manly about making a child but then running like a coward before that child is born. There's nothing manly about dominating a woman or treating her like a servant or leaving her with burdens that aren't rightly hers." That's an excerpt from the book, Mansfield's Book of Manly Men. So what does it mean to be a real man? That's what we're talking about today. So let me tell you about my guest, and we'll get this conversation started. Stephen Mansfield's a New York Times best-selling author. His books include Lincoln's Battle with God, The Faith of Barack Obama, The Search for God in Guinness, and many others. He's a popular speaker and commentator, regularly appearing on several major news networks. He lives in Nashville, Tennessee, and Washington, D.C. with his wife, Beverly. You can find him online at stephenmansfield.tv. Stephen, welcome back to the show. So glad to have you with us again today.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you again.
Well, as I said to you before the show, congratulations on another great book.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed this one, and I think the response among men is making it a great ride.
Well, I can't wait to hear what the response has been, but you're a veteran to the show, so you know we like to start out talking scripture, and you chose this time 1 Kings 2:2, and it says, "Be strong and show yourself a man." Talk about that passage.
You know, there are only a few times in the Bible where the word man is used, not so much of being male, but of the characteristics of a man. And this is one of them. David's passing from this world. He turns to his son and he says, "Be a man. Be the things a man is." There's only one, maybe two other times in Scripture where that happens. And one of them is when God shows up to Job and says, "Prepare to defend yourself like a man." And I just love that because it confirms what we all know, but modern society is trying to sort of throw out. That is the idea that there's a body of characteristics that identify true manhood.
Hmm. Well, okay, we look back at your body of work. You've written about Abraham Lincoln, the faith of Barack Obama and George W. Bush, and healing church wounds. So how did the inspiration for this book come about?
Well, two things, really. Because of the books I write and the speaking that I do, I spend a lot of time on college campuses, and a lot of people are suspicious and nervous about the millennials, especially millennial men, but I'm pretty excited about them and love working with them. And I noticed that they really want to be men. There's kind of a retro movement among young men. You know, they're dressing like grandfathers in the 1950s and what have you. And they would ask me, what does it mean to be a man? Now, there's been a men's movement in this country, you know, at least as of a few decades ago, but it was very baby boomer oriented. It was very sort of therapeutically oriented. Well, these guys go, well, I know I'm messed up, but just tell me what a man does. And I realized that we really hadn't been answering that question well. I certainly hadn't. So that was part of the inspiration for the book. That's the positive inspiration. The negative one was what you see on your TV every day, that the man is always the idiot in every TV commercial. Mm. You know, the 40-year-old guy who's doing a happy dance because he found the TV remote in the couch, and the wife and the daughters in the kitchen rolling their eyes. And we've seen that 100 times.
And they're beautiful and intelligent, and he's frumpy and dumpy. That scenario is everywhere, isn't it?
Exactly. He's weird. I mean, one guy in one commercial, you know, he gets an insurance company. So what does he do? He dresses his dog in his living room, and he puts on a sweater of the color of this company. It's just it's just insulting. It doesn't matter whether you're black, Asian, white, doesn't matter whether you're, you know, kind of late 20s or early 50s. Every male is either hanging out at the strip club or he's an idiot. And I just thought, you know, maybe we've allowed this kind of thing. Maybe we've allowed this image, but it's time for it to change.
Indeed. Well, I'm talking to Stephen Mansfield. He's got a brand new book out called Mansfield's Book of Manly Men. And just the cover is just so great. We've got two copies to give away. If you want to chime into the conversation or ask Stephen a question, I'm only going to give a couple opportunities for phone calls because I want to give Stephen as much time as possible. So here's your chance. 877-933-2484. Again, 877-933-2484. You can also email me at Susie@myfaithradio.com. So here's a question for you. God obviously has created us men and women, unique, capable, each in our own way. But this notion that women can do anything men can do, I think, is very damaging. I mean, on one hand, I'm not diminishing women, but I'm saying this wrong belief that we're just the same and we can do the same things diminishes men, but it also allows us as women or makes us miss who we are, don't you think?
Oh, there's no question about it. The people who ought to most be cheering on a good, righteous men's movement are women.
Yeah.
Not because they're weak, not because they're incapable. I mean, I wish I could introduce my wife to you over the air here, because she's strong and capable and they're more intelligent than I am. And sometimes contractors come to our house, and when they realize they're having a hard time with me, they'll go, "Can I just talk to your wife?" And I'm thinking, "Go right ahead, buddy. Just take your head right off. You got the better deal of this end right here." You know, but all that to say, you know, it's not a matter of some commentary that women can't do it. It's that men are supposed to do certain things, and women are supposed to do certain things, and they complement each other in this great relationship back and forth. And I'm sorry that a men's empowerment movement, or whatever you want to call it, a movement that makes men, is instantly taken by a lot of people as some kind of negative commentary on women. It's not. In fact, in my view, women have been really damaged by men not being men, in terms of how men treat them sexually, in terms of criminal things, in terms of just not being good husbands, the broken homes, the lack of fathering. So I'm hoping that women really come home to the idea that one of the best things for them, and not because they're weak, but exactly because they're able to achieve amazing things, is a good, strong men's movement.
Yeah, really. So our best case scenario is that men step into all that God intended them to be. That's when we're safe. That's when we're empowered, right?
Exactly. You know, it's very interesting. When I started this book, I really had never searched the internet before just for men and women's issues. I don't know why. It just wasn't much of a theme for me. And so when you Google men and women, or you know, what have you, it's almost everything is set in terms of either jokes or websites that are about tension between men and women. It's hardly ever about some kind of a complementary, you know, working with each other, enabling each other. It's really sad to me, and that's, I think, why some women are suspicious of a book or an author or a movement that's about men. But I got to tell you, if my wife went off somewhere and learned how to be, I don't know how she could be, by the way, but to be 10% a better woman, who's the beneficiary of that? I mean,
right.
who's the guy who's going to most enjoy that and celebrate? Well, me. So I think that the men have not shown up. They want to now, I believe. I'm hoping to help show them how with some other people. And I think that women will be the primary beneficiaries of that.
Excellent. 877-933-2484. You got a question? You want to chime into the conversation? As I said, we're only going to open the phone lines a couple of times. I want to give Stephen as much time as possible. We've got Pat calling in from Prescott, Wisconsin with a question. Pat, welcome. You're on the air.
How are you guys doing today?
We're doing great.
I have a comment, not really a question. I really like the topic here. I'm a veteran of the Navy. I just got out. I did 25 years in the Navy. And one of the things, when we did men's ministry in the Navy, men will not reciprocate or react to any kind of Christianity portrayed as weak, mamby-pamby, anything that they portray in the media. Hmm. It really resonates with somebody, with a real man, if you are genuine and if you are bold, and they want to be the protector, they want to be that warrior, they want to see that in other Christian men, and that's what attracts them to Christ.
Wow, that's a good
word. Not what the media is portraying, not what the world thinks of Christian men.
Stephen, you want to comment on what Pat has to say?
Yeah, Pat, great point. You know, it reminds me of that great line in John Eldridge's book called Wild at Heart, a book I really enjoyed. And he says, well, everybody's asking, you know, where are the men? And he responds, well, you've made them women. In other words, if you want men, then let's stop making them women. I think you're exactly correct. I do a lot of work in the military as well, and speak at the Naval Academy regularly, things like that. And I'll tell you what, those are some the men are manly people, and they don't, you know, they don't want to hear from someone who doesn't seem to be fully engaged as a male or a female. And I'll tell you, they can tell some kind of almost insulting and but sometimes funny jokes about the church. Some of them, they're kind of disgusted with the church. They'll say, well, man, a man-eating lion would die of starvation in most churches. You know, they're kind of being critical. Or I remember when I was pastoring, one of them said to me, well, there's not two genders, there's three, men, women, and preachers. And my point is not that these are, of course, remotely true, but this is the image that we've sometimes given off as Christians. And as a result, we've not reached men who are in some of those more forward military kinds of positions and desperately need the gospel we have to preach.
Well, you see these two extremes, a misuse of power, which you've addressed in your Church Wound book, you know, where it's an abuse of power. And then you have a passivity that passes for meekness, which isn't the same thing. So you have these two extremes, which are wrong pictures. So rarely do you see it modeled or even talked about, this thing you're talking about right here. But talk about Jesus and how he really did walk out this humility and this strength at the same time.
Well, if Jesus is the ideal man, and I think we Christians have to say that he is, I mean, he was a fully orbed human being. He was physical. I mean, we see him walking for miles. We see him not losing his temper, but being righteously angry about something and flipping over tables and driving people out of the temple courts. I can envision him. Now, this isn't in the scripture. I can envision him dumping Peter into the lake, you know, and having fun and everything. But I like the idea that he wept. I like the idea that he was a man fully in touch with who he was emotionally. He lived in a time and in a profession that required physical strength, but also required, you know, discipline and a sense of being tempered. So I think we've made, and this has been, this point's been made many, many times, kind of a mamby-pamby, kind of effeminate Jesus. And often men don't relate to it. You know, the classic image of the guy in the bathrobe with the sheep under his arm. But Jesus was more than that. He's not John Wayne. He's not Patton. That's not what we need to do with him. We just need to see him as he actually is in Scripture.
And he went to the cross.
Yes.
And you think about that. And he, for the joy set before him, he endured and he persevered. It's absolutely amazing. My producer put up a note on the board and said that a Time magazine cover story states that men are obsolete. Now, that makes me want to cry. I mean, truly. Did you see that report?
I've seen reports like it, and I've read some of the books the scholarship that point is based on. At the same time, though, in Time magazine, I believe just this past week, a very secular atheistic scholar, whom I read often because she's so brilliant, Camille Paglia, said that the feminist movement is actually making a huge mistake in diminishing men, because men are the ones who make a safe society, are the ones who do a lot of the kind of work that creates the environment in which women can thrive. She's just making the practical point that, you know, really women ought to celebrate the gifts that men bring to society, and of course it ought to be the other way around. So I thought that was really funny. Not funny, but ironic, perhaps, that this secular scholar who just hammers religion all the time suddenly made this point that seems as obvious as the nose on your face, but apparently has to be restored in our time.
Well, it seems the message of your book is not only for men, but it's for women, for how we can perceive men, for the church, for the culture. I mean, it is a message that has to cut through all of these. What's the word I'm looking for? But you know what I'm saying? Groups and perspectives, because we've lost the true picture of what men are about. One thing that's just grieved me, my hubby and I worked with youth for a number of years, and we see a lot of those young people in their young 20s now. And just so we kind of stay in touch with that generation. And I'm sure you've seen this too, Stephen, but there is a kind of a thing going on with young men, a kind of a prolonged adolescence where, you know, I even hear from young wives whose husbands are in their 30s and play video games till all hours of the night. Something you would never think, you know, where he's not helping with the kids because he's playing video games. And what I've also heard from women who say, you know, we feel like we've outpaced our men because we're waiting for them to grow up so we get degree upon degree, and where are the men? And so there is kind of a dichotomy there, wouldn't you say?
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, that's why we need, and one of the four, what we humorously call in the book, Mansfield's Manly Maxims, you know, we're just having some fun, but one of them is that manly men make manly men. you don't become a real man by necessarily, you know, going to a, reading a book or going to a seminar. It breaks my heart to say that about the book, but still, it's true. You have to have a culture of men that call the best in men out. It gives them something to belong to. It challenges men. And a lot of these kind of girly men, these kind of immature little adolescent men, even in their 30s and 40s, they've just got to have some good, godly men around them that say, snap out of it. What are you doing? You know, and hold up what true manhood is and stand with them and confront them and congratulate them. A lot of these guys haven't been fathered. A lot of these guys haven't had good examples. And so, yeah, I understand why women just look at their 36-year-old husbands who are up at 2 in the morning, you know, with Cheetos and the control for a game, and the women just roll their eyes. And that's why a lot of these marriages don't make it. So we need a good, solid, righteous culture of men who draw other men in, challenge them, help them grow up, and get in their face when they act like 2-year-olds.
Boy, that's so good. Well, the gentleman who wrote the foreword to your book, Lieutenant General William Boykin, am I saying his name right?
Yes.
He says, when we think of a man, we think of physical strength, but it's not physical strength that makes a man, it's moral strength. That was a powerful statement. I wonder if you could expound on that a little bit.
That's absolutely powerful. You know, I don't think I'm going to say this gentleman's name right, but I think you'll know who I'm talking about, the Australian evangelist who has no arms and no legs.
Oh, Vujicic.
Vujicic, yeah, my Polish is not real good, but you know who I'm talking about. Now, here's a guy who, by the definition of just a physical manhood, traditionally defined, is not a man. I mean, you understand, if that's all a man is arms and legs and what he can, you know, if he can swing a bat, this guy, by that definition, would not be much of a man. And yet, he's a model man. I mean, he's amazing. I was reading about him recently. He's got a wife and children. He plays games. He surfs. He does amazing things. And that's because, if you know his story, he's a man of character. He's a man who's risen above his difficulties. He seeks the Lord. He loves his family well. He has the characteristics and does the deeds of manhood. So General Boykin's exactly correct. And by the way, he should know. He was the commander of Delta Force for a lot of years.
Wow.
A serious, serious man. But my point is that he understands that just the physical doesn't make a man. And that's why I say in the book, I've had friends who are real great men who are 3 feet tall or didn't have arms and legs or were missing major parts of themselves from war, but they were still great men.
Such a good word, Stephen. Well, we've got an email in from a listener, Brent. He says, how do we as men lead our family well? I know we are the head of our household, and yet we are to be a servant leader. How would you help a guy find the balance between being a controlling and being too passive? I'd love to hear your response. Thanks. Great question, Brent. What do you say, Stephen?
Well, two things. First of all, in Ephesians 5, which is one of the great mandates for men, it says that men should tend their wives, so to speak, like Christ tended the church and surrendered himself for. Well, the Greek there really kind of leads us to a phrase I like very much, guardian coach. Who wouldn't want to be protected and who wouldn't want to be coached into being better? And so, you know, one of the principles we have in the book, again, this funny approach to Mansfield's manly maxims, is that manly men tend their field. Now, if a man turns to his family and starts telling him what to do and he thinks that somehow that's being a man, he's missing the point. The reality is that he is responsible for what happens in his field. He needs to be connected, engaged, involved, knowing what's happening in everybody's life and soul, encouraging, being on the spot, knowing when something changes, knowing when the son retreats to his room and the computer or the girl is dating a guy and there's been a change in her life and culture. This is how a man tends his field. And for me, it even comes down to if Bev and I walk in the door and there's a light bulb missing. I don't think she'll get that tomorrow. I just can't let even that little thing go by. I'm not saying I'm paranoid and nervous. I just see the field as mine to tend. And when when a man is consistently giving himself in that way, then even when he makes a mistake from time to time, the family understands because they're constantly receiving his loving care.
Well, they feel safe. And I've said this 1,000 times on this show. We are not hard to sweep off our feet. I'm telling you, we're not. Seriously, if we feel safe and cared for and listened to, we're not looking for perfection, but that presence and that care, I mean, that's an amazing thing. Well, here's an excerpt from your book. It says, sadly, too many men in America cannot identify with the characteristics of a real man. The ideal of the warrior, for example, is too high for them. What makes a man a warrior is his willingness to place himself between what he holds dear and anything that threatens it. Honor is the chief motivator. Dishonor is unthinkable. He does the right thing without expectation of reward because honor is an intrinsic value that, when manifested in one's life, provides its own rewards. Beautifully put, by the way, but say more about that.
Well, it simply is a matter that I've been entrusted, for example, with Bev, and I am to protect her. It's always the right thing for me to protect her. And I'm not, the problem with men is either passivity or cowardice. And so they let things go by, they watch their wives, get hurt or be mistreated or be overworked, and they don't do anything about it. A man has to have a sense of honor, which says, I will put myself between you and harm's way. Now, for most of us, that's not going to be, a gun or a kidnapping or something. It's going to be spiritually. It's going to be emotionally. It's going to be taking responsibility for things. And as you've said, even the woman with the strongest personality, if her husband will stand up for her, will protect her, will care for her, and will have the courage even to speak to her of things that ought to be changed. Honey, there's some bitterness coming out of your life. What's going on? Let's talk about this. Have that kind of courage. I'll tell you what, as you say, women will melt in the arms of men like that, because everybody needs to be cared for, guarded, protected, nurtured.
Yeah, I have a friend from long ago, and she was married to a husband who was on staff, pastoral staff, and he was everybody's hero, and he was so sweet, but he did not have a backbone. People walked all over him to the detriment, and even people would go up to her and kind of just challenge her in a way to say that they wanted his time over her. And she just so sweetly asked him, step in. He wouldn't. And I watched her slowly die. And then she ended up having an affair, which she's totally responsible for. But yeah. Then she wore the A, of course, and was ousted by the church, and she's left the faith. And I watched that whole thing, and he's the victim, and she's responsible. I know that. But I watched the light go out of her eyes in over a year, as she was just begging him, stand in the gap for me, and he just wouldn't do it. And I thought, wow, you do bear some of that responsibility there, dude.
Yeah, and see, if you and I were ministering to them, you should talk to her, of course, about, her moral choices. But I'd turn to him and say, hey, buddy, this is on you. Mm. Weak men make angry wives. Weak men leave holes in wives' souls that they're going to fill some way. And exactly the same way it happens with men. And so, you can't just point the finger at a wife and go, well, she had an affair. You created an environment where she was desperate and hungry. Own that, and then we'll start talking about how you can be a real man. And that's I don't really listen to men too much who gripe about those kinds of things. Most of them have created an environment in which that was just almost destined to happen.
And men do have more power than they realize. But then we as women, your next book will have to be Mansfield's books of Woman the Woman, because we have power too,
qualified.
Right? Your wife could write that one with you.
Yeah, I bet she could.
Well, men have soul wounds just like we as women do. And this isn't exactly a culture that's conducive to a man's soul healing. Because as you set up at the beginning, it's really more of a culture that bashes men, that holds men out to be idiots. And it's like, if you're trying to be strong, you're tyrannical. And if you're meek, you're a weasel. And so how does a man find soul healing so that he can do and be everything God intends for him?
Now, this is where it's a little bit different for men, I believe. There's this great image from a movie that all men will know about Black Hawk Down, which is every man listening probably has watched this movie. And at one point, a young private turns to a sergeant. The sergeant's just given him an order in the middle of a battle, and the private says, I'm hit. I'm hurt. And the sergeant says, we're all hurt. And that's a little bit of the way it is with men. It's not that we don't want to be whole. We those of us who are Christians understand that Jesus restores our souls. We just don't make that primary. We know that sin has damaged us. We know our choices have damaged us. But it's sort of like when you're on a football team, sometimes, you get hurt and the coach just says, well, tape it, put it in the whirlpool, get back in the game. I mean, we got a game to play here. This is not, you can't just sit out because you're hurt. Now, obviously, there are major wounds that men need time out to tend. But in a culture of manliness, you recognize your wounds, you work against your wounds, but you never use it as an excuse. You never sit around nurturing your wounds to the exclusion of your duties. And that's what I think often distinguishes a righteous man. He may be as hurt as a man who's not a believer or a man who's out there without any remedy, and he's working on that. But in the meantime, he's manning his station. He's tending his field. He's doing the things he's called to do. And that may be the difference.
Wow, I really appreciate that, because on the flip side, nursing it's almost like you disable yourself, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. Boy. We play that Eagles song, Get Over It, all the time.
That's good. Talking to Stephen Mansfield today. He's got a phenomenal book called Mansfield's Book of Manly Men, an utterly invigorating guide to being your most masculine self. We're going to open the phone lines just after the break. If you want to chime in, ask questions, here's that number, 877-933-2484, or you can email me if that's easier, Susie@myfaithradio.com. More with Stephen Mansfield in just a moment. Thanks for tuning in today. Nothing like a little Kirk Franklin to wrap up your Friday. Talking to Stephen Mansfield today. He's got a great book titled Mansfield's Book of Manly Men. And Stephen, I was thinking about what you said before the break when I said, talked about, you know, men have wounds as well. And you say that you respond to them differently. And I think that's a very important distinction to make. And I'm remembering from one of our past conversations when you had a legitimate, deep church wound. You were very much hurt, you know, by the church and by a group of particular people. And you were feeling down about it, and you had some pastors come and kind of yank you up by the bootstraps and stand you on your feet. Just talk about that moment and how, like, if that happened to girls, we'd probably never talk to each other again. But it was exactly what you needed.
It's exactly what I needed. I'm kind of a jock, kind of hard-hitting guy, and I was going through a pretty horrible time, and I was really mad about it, really bitter about it, and angry at a given group of people. Well, a bunch of my sort of coach pastor types got me in a room and just got in my face. You will never fulfill your destiny if you do this kind of thing. I mean, they just, it was a coach yelling into a player's helmet. And then it kind of came to a moment of pause, you know, and one of them said, well, let's go eat. And I sat there. I thought, well, these guys, you know, they hate me. They need to go eat and get away from me. And the big black guy, part of this group, turned to me at the door and said, you coming? I said, you want me to go? He said, yeah, you're buying. And, and you know, I mean, the typical guys, you know, we whoop each other up and then we go get a steak. But I got to tell you, that kind of manly approach, which is, you know, you're an idiot. We're going to help you, but we're not going to leave you.
Because you're worth it.
Exactly. We're going to stay with you. And I'm telling you, 10 minutes into that, I mean, before the rolls came in that meal, we were not talking about how stupid Stephen could be. We were talking about anything else, man stuff. And it was very healing to my soul because I think men, what they're meant to do is keep the bonds despite the fact that their friend's an idiot. Rebuke him, help him, strengthen him, but stay in relationship with him. And as you say, sometimes, not always, sometimes women are better at this than men, but sometimes women can get hurt and then never talk to each other again or have tension. Guys are supposed to go, look, we're all hurt. Let's just get on with it, you know? And that I think distinguishes a real healthy culture from an unhealthy culture.
Which really begs the question then, why more men, I should say, the statement, let me say it this way, men do need to get in with each other and challenge each other because we're kind of staying out of each other's businesses. Because I hear women say, you know, my husband's friends know that he's on the elder board and he's engaged in pornography or whatever that thing is, and nobody's saying anything. So there is a call for men. Part of what it means to be a manly man is to dare to do what your friends did for you. No?
Exactly, exactly. And I think that what happens often is just because I've got 20 years of pastoral experience before I became an author and worked in D.C. and so on, I've just cultivated, and also being with military guys and so on, kind of an easy way of confronting people. You don't have to, you know, raise your hands like Moses, you know, and say, thus saith God, you know, and go dramatic. I just go, hey, you know, I'm noticing something about you. You mind? I'm going to chat with you. I don't even ask permission. I shouldn't have even done that. I don't even ask their permission because, you know, the fact that you're my friend means I have the right to talk to you about what's wrong in your life. If you don't want that, don't be my friend. And so I'll just turn to him and say, you know, I'm noticing real bitterness with you and your wife. Talk to me about that. Or you've taken 9 nine looks at the waitress. Tell me what's going on at home.
Or, wow.
Gosh, I've never heard language like that. Whatever it is, you know. And it's amazing what changes in the room, in the culture of the people around them when someone says, look, I love you, but you're doing wrong. Let's get on this. And it just makes everybody go, all right, we're going to be serious here for a moment. You know, we're going to get right. And that it only takes one guy doing that to change an entire culture of men.
And it makes you a safe friend, really, because you're standing on the wall for that friend. You're doing the hard thing, you know? Well, you know, you talked about your wife. Got to say a word about my hubby, but he stands 6'3", but that's still not what makes him a manly man. He builds giant buildings. He's a senior project manager for commercial construction. And I always say he builds tall buildings and then he leaps them in a single bound. But which blows me away that he does is on the weekends, as an author and speaker, I speak 2 weekends a month. He's on the road with me working my book table. And when we're away on these weekends, people think he works for me. They don't realize he has a day job. And it's so funny because he walks off these commercial projects and these guys are like going hunting and he's like going to women's retreat. He knows who he is. He's in studio. His name's Kevin. I want to introduce him to you because I think he has a question for you. Kevin, meet Stephen.
Hey, Stephen. How you doing?
Kevin, I am happier now knowing who you are. That's for sure.
I love the conversation. Honestly, I wanted to come and sit in today just because of this title, honestly, Book of Manly Men, that just intrigued me. And I'm just loving this conversation so far. But,
good.
You know, one thing I just wanted to say, this is resonating with me more than you can imagine. But just like Susie said, I have so many times and opportunities where, you know, I work in construction all week. And I will say, you know, like she just mentioned, I do construction during the week and women's events a lot of times on weekends just because we minister together. And that's what we end up doing. So, but the intriguing thing to me is it isn't that I, you know, I tell people that I, you know, I'm in commercial construction and it's kind of it's a manly business, and you can imagine the, you know, the people that I work with every day.
Sure.
It's a culture that's it's kind of a man's world in a lot of ways. But that's not what, when people make comments about that, it's not because I do construction during the week. It's, you know, a lot of times I'll say I'm going to a women's event to work my wife's book table, and a lot of people will say that after that comment, like, wow, you must really know who you are. You must be a man's man, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
like I just
it's
said.
Really, it's just kind of really interesting to me, but what just kind of occurs to me, I think there's a lot of people out there, a lot of men probably listening that, you know, are really trying to do this right, and I think this book and this message is really resonating with a lot of guys, but I think it'd be really good to just have some encouragement to the guys out there that are just doing it every day and just trying to, you know, trying to live their lives in a, you know, in a godly way. And, you know, just encouragement to guys like that, that are just out there working hard, trying to do it and, you know, just be men of God like they're called to be.
Man, I appreciate that setup and I appreciate what you do. You know, one of the four little fun maxims we have in the book at the start is that manly men live for the glory of God. And as I develop that in the book, I talk about the fact that what a man's called to do, he's not going to get enough applause or praise for it in this life. We just can't be living for the opinions of men and for people to stand around and go, man, you're awesome. So a man's got to do what he does to the glory of God as he loves his wife. So what your wife is saying is appealing about you, for example, is that you go, and it's like you put on a dress and makeup, you just go and you're a man there at the conference or the retreat, whatever it is, and you man the table. But, you know, your manhood is not derived from people thinking that you're awesome or you're driving a truck or something like that. You just know who you are. You know who you are in God. You're calm. You're peaceful. You're loving your wife. And that has an appeal and a power to it that is just overwhelming. So what I'm saying is, for the men out there who are doing it and doing it constantly, understand that you've got the applause of heaven. Understand that you're living for the glory of God. And I want to say one other thing, too, and that is I spend a lot of time with men, military, overseas, all kinds of things. Every time you've got a man, unless he's had a massive correction in his life, every time you have a man who really from his youth has been a real strong man, there's always been a strong, quiet father who knew who he was, had his hands on God, loved his family without need to applause and praise and payback, and that created awesome kids. And I tell you, that right there to me is the heart of being a man. But again, in our unfathered generation, so many guys need so much affirmation and compliment that they have a hard time doing things quietly like you're doing. So I'm glad we've gotten that on the air because it's a real model of what men ought to be.
So good. As you mentioned, these maxims, your first one was manly men do manly things. Give more examples of what that looks like on a practical level.
you know, practical level, I mean, again, it's not a matter of a man feeling like a man or, you know, smoking a cigar, drinking a whiskey, all the things that some guys think. It's about doing the right things. It's about being honorable. It's about protecting. It's about not using words that destroy. It's about being aware of what your wife's dealing with, what's happening in her life, up, down, 20 pounds heavier, need some help, need some support, tension with one of the kids. You got to tend to that. It's a matter of respect and honor, words that affirm, treatment that affirms, taking care of things, not allowing things to become a burden. I've got a friend who's part of this with me. He is always saying, ain't no romance without finance. You got to make sure the money's taken care of and orderly and not misspent and et cetera. You got to keep unrighteous things from out of the home, that kind of thing. It's a man being on the case, on the job, being respectful. Real quick little illustration. I started learning some of these things when my father, when I was maybe five, who was a high-ranking military officer, turned to me and said, open the door for your mother, the car door for your mother. Well, I remember thinking, well, she can do that better than I can, but okay. So I struggled, got the door open to her mom. He said it 20 more times over the next year, maybe. And in time, I realized we're not doing this because it's a physical thing. We're doing this because mom should be honored. I tell you, that deed worked into my heart. It does not matter if she's more physically capable. The fact that she's a woman and my mother deserves to be treated with honor. And that expanded into a lot of other things in my life, just that simple deed. So the touch, the word, the protection, the words of not just, honey, you're awesome, but real honor, raising those standards in the home, all of these kinds of things that get absorbed in a righteous manly culture are the deeds that men ought to be doing.
Mm, that's exactly what I was looking for. So helpful. Well, you talked about the manly men tend their fields, and say more about the whole idea of owning your territory, just that oversight and kind of having your arms around the lot lines that God has given you to tend.
Yeah, you know, Paul said it very well, and of course, anything Paul said was very well, but in Corinthians, he said, I will not boast beyond the field assigned to me. That's one translation, maybe a little bit better to the Greek. And so I'm of the opinion that every man, really every person, but every man in particular, has a field that's assigned to him. I imagine your husband's still living. Still listening. And so he has his construction company. He has you, the kids, a house, you know, a dog, three vehicles, whatever it might be. You know, I don't know exactly what you've got, but that's his field. Maybe it's also a political responsibility. Maybe he's on the town council, the church board, whatever. All of that is his field. Now, his first responsibility is to make sure that there's not too much crowding into his field to keep him from doing what he's assigned to by the Lord. What has the Lord given him in this season of his life, and what hasn't the Lord given him for this season in his life? And then it's a matter of tending it well. You don't own a house and let it go to pot. You don't marry a wife and then ignore her. You don't have children and then not tend their souls as they go through the different difficult adolescent years, or spend time with them when they're young and need the rough housing, all of that. So it's simply it's almost a mathematical thing to some extent. I sit down with men and help them decide what is meant to be in your field. Well, you join seven softball teams. Clearly, that's not meant to be in your field. And so you define the field, and then you start taking care of what's there, and you learn how to do it, you grow it, you nurture it. This is when a man really is partnering with the Lord to orchestrate his family's life in a healthy and powerful way.
Mm, so good. Will you tell a story in the book? I think you were in Syria. Forgive me. You were on the roof of a hotel when you really became a man. You were a man before then, but that
you better
was
explain that.
Yeah, no, I shouldn't say that. If I wasn't on live radio, I would so cut what I just said out of there.
Yeah, I bet
which,
you would.
Yeah, you had a realization. There was kind of one of those watershed moments. How about you say that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I say in the book, what you said. That I kind of getting men to pay attention. Hey, I became a man. What happened was I was in my early 30s. I was doing some relief work in the Middle East, and I got stuck because of paperwork problems in Damascus. I happened to have some friends, it sounds very odd now given what's happened in Syria, who were in the Syrian parliament, and they took me up onto the roof of a hotel, a very nice hotel, and had a little party for me because I got stuck in Damascus for 2 weeks. They knew I was a little bit down. And while I was up there, I could hardly communicate with these Arab men, but one of them asked in broken English if I had a son. Well, I did. He was maybe, oh, I don't know, 10 at the time. And I said, I do. They said, what is his name? I said, his name is Jonathan. And they said, well, you have a new name, you know. And I said, what? And so they explained that in Arab tradition, when a man has a son, his name changes. And it becomes Abu, which means father in Arabic, and then some derivative of the son's name. So they started calling me Abu John. Again, my son's name being Jonathan. And they started celebrating that like he was born yesterday. They danced and brought in food and celebrated, and it was amazing. And I'll tell you, it was the first time in my life. I was already a pastor. I was already the father of a son. I had gone to college, et cetera, et cetera. It was the first time in my life that anybody had welcomed me to the fellowship of being a man, that somebody had said, okay, you're among us now. And here's what it takes, and welcome, congratulations. And even though they couldn't talk to me very clearly, and I couldn't talk to them, it changed me. It was an affirmation of a milestone, a rite of passage for a man. And I got to tell you, I think that we need to be doing that today, in whatever the ceremonies we want to. You know, Jewish tradition was a child, boy turns 13, he becomes a man with responsibilities in the community, and there's the bar mitzvah. Military has its version of these things, sports. But we need in the church, we need amongst men, just even informally, to say, all right, son, you're a man now, and here's responsibilities, and I'm going to walk with you. And there are privileges that come with this, but they are hard-earned. Let's teach you how to do this. And that thing on that roof, even with men I couldn't talk to, changed me and showed me that initiation, so to speak, some kind of consistent initiation into the fellowship of manhood is important, and not just as a ceremonial thing, but as an actual affirmation of the point of life you've arrived in.
You know, what's kind of standing out to me is this whole idea of acknowledgement, because you were talking about a man's pain. You know, you deal with it differently than we as women, and it's that distinction is so helpful to hear you say that. But you had these friends come over, and they acknowledged your pain, but then they grabbed you by the shoulder pads, basically, and put you on your feet, right?
Exactly.
And here they acknowledged your manhood as a father. And I think when you flip that around, what's so missing is acknowledgement of man and his strength. I mean, you've been dismissed through in the culture. And so really, this is a call for acknowledgement that God made you unique and different for a purpose, right?
Yes, exactly. And I'll tell you, some of the times that men are the biggest moments for men are the times when they either sideline themselves or they're sidelined. For example, I have children. Well, what happens after a new baby is born? I mean, nobody's being rude to the father probably, but he's just not essential at the moment. You know, it's the mother-in-law, it's the mom, it's the sisters-in-law, whatever. And the husband's over there, you know, twiddling his thumbs, excited and happy, but he doesn't. Some guys need to take him somewhere and put their arm around him and say, congratulations, man, you're a father. Do you have any idea what that means, you fool? You know, kind of have fun with it.
Give him a bubblegum cigar.
Exactly. Do whatever, you know. Yeah. But the bottom line is men need to pull around other men at these moments because these are critical moments, even though in our modern American culture, Western culture, men rarely have any kind of instruction or affirmation or, okay, buddy, this is a milestone. We're going to have a big steak tonight, but we're also going to talk to you about what it means to be a father. That culture would change our society right there.
Hmm. And in a culture with so many fatherless young men, really is a call for men like you, like my husband, like others, to come alongside those who need that acknowledgement. I see you. You've got a purpose. You're a man now. And wow, I think that's so great. Well, you include a number of stories in the book of just men of honor in different shapes and sizes, which I love. I think that's so important because there's not really exactly a one size fits all for what a manly man looks like. But you tell the story about a man named Yabetz. I think I'm saying his name right.
Yes.
Tell us his story.
Well, Yabetz is a young man who is in a family that's just negative and harsh and critical and sit around the dinner table and remember the old painful days and never talk about anything positive. And we know his story. He finally got a grasp or a handle on what it meant to be honorable. That word really lived in him. He wanted to be honorable. And so he realized that honor in his life meant pushing back against these forces from his own family that tried to shrink him, make him small, make him vain, bitter, negative, regretful. And he reached out to God, and he said, I want to push back on this stuff, and I want your hand to be upon me, and I want to fulfill the great things that I'm made for. Now, some people have already figured out that we're talking about Jabez. And the story of Jabez is very, very powerful for men, because it says that Jabez was more honorable than his brothers. So somehow in Jabez's soul, as he listened to the bitterness and the smallness, and the Bible specifically says his mother named her children based on the pain she'd had when she gave birth to them. I mean, this is a bitter family. But Jabez pushes back. He says, I want to break the curse of smallness. I ask you to put your hand upon me, heal me, and extend me in honor. And that's what a man does. A man embraces honor and understands that he's meant to fulfill what he's made to be, the destiny that's on his life. And a lot of that includes serving other people. So men, the cry of men has got to be, make me an honorable man.
Yeah, and dares to ask great things from God. You know, has vision, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, in a lot of homes, if there even are two parents, you know that usually the woman is providing what vision is there. I mean, and that's not always bad. My wife provides a lot of vision for us. But if she's doing it alone, and then she's got to drag my carcass along because I'm not helping her, or part of it, or hearing God, or, you know, passionate about things. I mean, you know, we've got things we want to buy, invest, do for people, accomplish, lives we want to touch before we pass from this life. That's how it is. And a man should be carrying that, I think, primarily. Not because the woman doesn't have vision. Again, most women have more vision than men, but because it's his to make sure an environment is created in which that vision can be fulfilled.
Well, Stephen, talk to the man. We have more men, by the way, listening than women, and I think I love that about Live the Promise. It's amazing how that has evolved. But talk to the man listening today who feels maybe it's too late, like his sons are young adults now, and he's not really been so intentional in passing some of these truths down. What can he do?
You know, it is amazing what I've seen in my experience, that it's never too late, number one, and the smallest thing can make a massive difference, just the smallest thing. I was going through a horrible time in my life. My father was kind of a distant military man, and he just said, well, son, you will continue to rise. Now, I got to tell you, this is like one of the three things my father ever said to me of kind of a motivating, I believe in you kind of thing, and it changed, just because the words lived in me, it changed my whole orientation. And I was already in my 30s.
So, wow.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't take much. And so if a father says, man, I'm just realizing what fatherhood is, my son's 17, I can see the negative, you know, it's never too late. Things can be healed, things can be forgiven, and the tools that you have, your example, your words, your time. Time and again, I've heard men, even in prison, say that when their fathers called them on the phone and said, look, I know you've had this bad thing happen, but I believe in you. I believe that God gave you to me. I love you. I'll be there for you when you get out. It changes everything. So the power of a man's words, and the power of his example, and the power of hanging in no matter how bad things get, it always can turn things around. And I want to say one other thing, too, and that is that a lot of men are sitting there in cultures and churches and maybe their businesses, and they're kind of twiddling their thumbs. They see somebody who needs to be brought in, so to speak, embraced, helped, encouraged. You know, it really is time for us men, especially Christian men, to stop wondering, well, who's going to go talk to Fred? Well, who should do that? Look, if you're standing there and you see it, you've got a mandate to go do it. Do it gently. Do it lovingly. But we got to stop being cowards. We got to realize that men have got to be brought in. They've got to be helped. Every man wants other men around him helping him to be a better man. And I just believe that that's got to prevail in our culture, especially our church culture, where we're sometimes too polite to cross somebody's sense of boundaries.
Indeed. My husband, Kevin, has another question for you, Stephen. Go ahead,
sure.
Kev.
Hey, Stephen, maybe this is just a building on what you just said, but some of us, I think all of us actually are somewhat shaped by our circumstances, the things that we go through in life. I'm a cancer survivor. That's one of the things that kind of put me on my back in some ways and made me kind of look up and become more dependent on God in a lot of ways. But some of us have, I would call it more of a overdeveloped sort of a tending your field, where I have to do this myself and I have to kind of go after these things and take care of it because it's just like it's in my DNA and I'm wired to do it almost more than I should.
Self-preservation,
so, yeah,
self-sufficiency.
And a lot of that, just that it's depends on me and only me. But, you know, maybe I'm sure you get there in the book too, but it's just occurs to me that, You know, the older that I get, the more dependent I get on the Lord and the strength that that brings. And actually, I do it better when I'm fully dependent on God, listening to Him, and He's the one that's directing me. I become more potent, I guess, you mm-hmm. know, in the things that I do when I'm truly dependent on God.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. In fact, I say in that one maxim about manly men live for the glory of God that really we can't do what we are responsible for on our own. My wife is a beautiful and wonderfully complex person. I don't have the natural wisdom and insight to tend her, help her, let's call it pastor her, protect her, be aware of what might be coming against her just by staring at her. I've got to have some insight from the Lord. You know, and many times men turn to their wives and go, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" Well, they don't know. I mean, sometimes you don't know what's happening to you. You know, you just feel a certain thing. And so I need wisdom from God. I need understanding. I need insight. And while we're on the subject, I also need other men. You know, I'm in my 50s, but I need a 70-year-old man who goes, "You know, when my wife hit about 60, she felt these following things, and we began to do such and such." And I go, "Aha, that's it." You know, and nobody could have helped me. You know, I couldn't have figured that out on my own, or nobody younger than me could have helped me. And so I think your band of brothers and your hand on God and the intention to be a righteous man is really a huge part of the battle. And I appreciate you setting up that question.
Your band of brothers, your hand on God, and your intent to be a righteous man. That should be on a bumper sticker. Man, it's almost time to pray, but I want to hear what you said. This, you're getting quite a response from the book. What are you hearing?
Well, it's amazing. I don't know if you're aware that Glenn Beck was apparently in a difficult situation, and I barely know him or I'm aware of him in media, but he got the book just at a dark time in his life here just about a month and a half ago, got on the air and started talking about the book before we even had talked about doing
wow.
an interview. And so he said, "This is a game changer, and it's really impacted me." And so about a week later, I went down there and did the interview, and we're going to do some more. But that's an example of where it's landing in some people's laps who then can talk about it. My social media is blown up. Many people are reading, and I've had men literally call me in tears. I couldn't figure out who they were because they couldn't stop, you know, weeping on the phone.
Wow.
It's really having an impact, and I'm very, very grateful for that.
Well, thank the Lord, and congratulations. Well, as always, these are just such great conversations, Steve. I wonder if you'd just wrap up praying for that man that's listening today who you've got his number and he knows that God has more for him. Would you pray for him?
Absolutely. Father, thank you for the men listening and the men who will hear these truths secondhand. We pray for every man who is listening that he will be strengthened, that he will be connected to Jesus, that the passion to be a righteous man and a strong man will be rebirthed in his soul. For those who are hungry to be godly and strong and manly men. Father, give them the example of Jesus, draw them into the scriptures, surround them with a righteous band of men, and give them blueprints like my book, other books, other teachings. And let us have, Father, in this generation and in this country, a great movement of righteous men who are calling up the young, who are taking a stand, who are creating an environment in which women can achieve everything they're made to achieve and are restoring some of the age-old foundations that have been lost. Forgive us for our passivity and our weakness, and make us now the men in the image of Jesus we're called to be. Mm. In Jesus' name we pray.
Amen.
Do you want a revolution? I say, do you want a revolution? Come on.
Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson, and you can find a podcast of today's program on our website at myfaithradio.com, along with the music and the scriptures referenced throughout the hour. You can also find podcasts from Faith Radio Mornings, Connecting Faith, and Everyday Relationships. Even our weekend programs are there as well. Finally, guess what? The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who keeps you strong to the end. Have a great day.